When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Running It Straight, folks, for your Wednesday, 24th of April, round 7 in the books for the NRL, and we are talking rugby league for the next hour up until 3 o'clock. Myself, Sammy Hewitt, alongside former Warrior Anthony Gelling, and we have a special guest on around about 10 minutes' time today, Tony Edel, who is, I'm told not to say the head of, but sort of like the coach of the coaches, as it were. Jello, he's the coach of all the development pathways and junior programs at the Warriors. And the message I got from the Warriors media manager is that he's been around longer than pretty much anyone at the club. So it goes back a long time. Tony Edel is joining us in about 10 minutes' time. Lots to talk about with him. The junior teams that are back in full action in 2024. We have the Harold Matthews team in the grand final on Sunday, which is going to be awesome. We'll talk about that. Another thing we've got to talk about as well, which I'll just talk about right off the top of the show, Jello, is the news coming out of Sydney that Jet Cleary officially, I know there's been rumblings of it for the last couple of weeks, but Jet Cleary officially has been signed by the Warriors to come over and have his development pathways continue at the Warriors, which is a big signing, and there's lots of ramifications that we'll talk to Tony Edel about as well. We'll look at the Anzac game tomorrow against the Titans, go through the team list for that, as well as some of the other news and games going on this weekend. But first and foremost, Jello, got to rip the Band-Aid off before you get to all the positive stuff, mate. How have you recovered? How have you come through Friday's big loss to the Dragons?
It was painful to watch, Sammy. Painful physically, because I was playing poker at the time. I was at my mate's house. I had my back to the TV, so I was this guy with my head turned backwards.
Right, so painful
for 80 minutes. So painful physically and then painful spiritually just to watch that kind of onslaught from the Dragons. Yeah.
Oh man, it's fair to say probably the worst performance under Andrew Webster.
I'm trying to jog my mind back to last year. I don't think there was many.
Most of the losses last year were games where we were really in the hunt and maybe just a couple of lapses of concentration or whatever. Like, I don't think we've been as soundly outplayed under Andrew Webster as that was.
It's a tricky one too, because what have we been saying all year when we compare teams and stuff like that? We always say the good teams don't get blown out.
Yeah, that's true.
And we also
said that last week.
I said that last week. We also say the good teams don't lose at home, and they also don't lose, you know, back to back.
Right.
Which is on the line this week.
Right. They don't lose to the Gold Coast Titans.
And you don't lose to the Titans, that's for damn sure.
So, Jello, talk us through, I guess, what you saw. There are Warriors fans out there, and I know a lot of our listeners probably aren't in this camp, but there's a lot of Warriors fans out there who get very, very emotional in a loss like that, and, you know, it's all of a sudden we're not a top eight team and, you know, we're not going to win a grand final and that. But what did you see from the game, the areas where we really struggled, and I guess reasons why we saw a performance like that?
I think it looked like we went away from, firstly, what works. And for the first seven rounds, we look like when we get into their 20, we look very sure of where we're going. You know, we come up against other teams where, you know, they kind of try to make stuff up on tackle four, tackle five, close to the line. That's what we looked like on the weekend. It looked like we're just kind of freestyle, ad lib as we go. And there was a couple things that didn't work, like the little grubber off the back of those shift plays, which didn't work. And then we kind of kept at it, hoping for one to come off. And I think we went away from just playing direct. If you look at that Dragons line, they didn't come up off the line. They got up a couple metres and then they all just kind of slid and hung back, and we just kind of played into that with those. Yeah.
It definitely felt like at times we had stretched them, like we had gone left to right and we had opened them up, but then we just didn't make the final pass, or, you know, we made a mistake or just something didn't quite work. It seemed like we were able to stretch them a little bit, but do you agree with the sentiment that I think is echoed by a lot of people and Andrew Webster himself, that the boys look tired? Like, it's been, you know, six rounds of pretty grueling football, short turnarounds.
Yeah.
And, you know, just the injuries meant that we weren't able to get that right rotation through the middle that we, you know, want to do, given the sort of bodies that we've got running around.
I think the short turnarounds a factor. I also think the travel's a factor. You know, and you ask any of the players, coaches, they never talk about it because they want to eliminate all excuses. You know, they want to take responsibility for that. But watching that game, I think they went down 18. I think the gap was like 18, 16. One of my mates whispers in my ear, Webster's got to go.
Are you serious? Come on, man. That is vintage. That is vintage Warriors fans.
Albeit he works for the Blues, but
sure, yeah, competition. what do you make, Jello? I was on a podcast last night with two legends, the Wise Up Boys, who are very, very analytical and sort of the way that they assess the game, I think is fantastic. And they actually wanted me to ask you, and you know, from a former player's perspective, lot of fans, it seems, get frustrated, particularly under this Andrew Webster system, where we have this game plan, and if it doesn't seem to work, we sort of just try and keep doing the same thing over and over again. Mm. You were just talking about those grubber kicks there, and we just sort of try and do the same thing.
Yeah.
From a player's perspective, how does it sit with you, like sticking to a game plan versus like adjusting? How much you're willing to step outside of a game plan if you as a player are seeing that something is at work versus trusting what the coach has told you, even if you're 18 points in a hole. Because we've seen against the other team it work, right? Yeah. Like Manly, we were 16 points in a hole, 18 points in a hole, and it worked. We came back. Mm. We've seen it against the Sharks when we were down in a hole there. So, yeah, from a player's point of view, how does that dynamic sort of sit, the playing of the game plan versus mixing it up and trying to do something different?
I think you have to have a bit of a balance. And what you don't want, and what happens quite a lot, is teams wait till they're behind, and then it's like, okay, now let's try something different. Now let's mix it up. Depends on your personnel as well. Some players, they love that structure, and that suits them. Me personally, as a player, I hated that. I hated being told, you know, this is where we're going, this is what we're doing, because I want to play what's in front of me.
Mm.
You know, and if the defense is changing what we're doing, or changing what they're doing, like, why should I stick to the same thing? And that, like when I was playing at Wigan, that was a very structured system, and that rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, and I got dropped. I was in and out the team because of that reason.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I think it just depends on you know, I think Warriors, definitely you look at the way that we're coached and stuff, it's very, like, very structured, heavily structured.
It is.
And I can understand where that frustration comes from. You know, you see some wingers, you know, like we're very good at, on the last tackle, we protect our winger, let him catch the ball.
Yep.
A lot of teams leave their wingers wide open, but yet we still don't contest or go for that little tap back.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people pulling their hair out and stuff like that, but it's just the game plan.
Yeah.
You know, our system is we're going to catch, make a tackle straight away, and then get the ball back
way. I asked that question last night. I said, you know, is that one thing that frustrates you guys, you know, that we're not contesting some of these kicks, at least one or two of them? But to your point, you know, it is that sort of stick to the game plan type thing. The left side is getting a bit of criticism, you know, not being, I guess, creative enough, using Roger in the right way. You mentioned putting him on the wing, and it was funny, Jello, I put that out. I think I tweeted it out, and, you know, lots of people sort of came back at me, but it's funny, after the weekend, people now starting to buy into your theory of maybe shifting Roger to the wing. What do you see happening on the left? Obviously, that's where Tomaiti is generally ball playing. What are you seeing there that's just not quite working, not quite coming off for them?
I think what's not quite coming off is you don't have Luke Metcalf there. You know, that's, I think people are starting to notice his absence a lot more now. Me personally, like, you look at other teams that have lost their number six or lost a half, what they tend to do, and what I think is the Roosters the only ones that have done it, they put Connor Watson there. You know, he's usually a loose forward, put him there and just defensively make that the priority. Just defensively lock it down and let our points come from other areas of the field. I think that would be the way to go. Like, for me personally, I like how Chanel defends.
He can
whack people, he's really strong. I'd put him at six. I know he's injured at the moment, or is he back?
He's still injured.
So ideally I'd put him at six and just hammer the right side. You know, that right side can score points and stuff like that. We can rip him through the middle.
It sort of seemed like the one time we did, well, you know, finally when we did get that left to right going, then Dallin goes and scores in the corner, and you're still wondering where was that the whole time. But I think you also mentioned, maybe it was last week or a couple of weeks ago, about how teams, we can't just always go down the right like we did last year, now that teams will know that, right, and they've learned from us. We had the surprise factor last year, and so getting that left side a little bit more potent is probably quite important in that regard. But yeah, just seeing Roger getting the ball in better positions, it seems like he gets the ball and he's got nowhere to go, and they're expecting Roger to do Roger things. You know?
Well, Webby spoke about it a few weeks ago, and he said, you know, we have variations. I think it was before the Souths game. He said, we have variations and we'll use them when we need to use them. I feel like those variations, you see them in the first 10 minutes and then it's like, well, they always score first, you know. Warriors are always good for first try and second try. Might jump to a 6-0, 12-0 lead. And then after that,
that's what we were all talking about, right? That ruthlessness, and there's that their middle period where we just seem to like button off. And it's why I think having Dylan Walker actually back this week is massive, because it gives that energy lift, you know, through that middle period, which we didn't have against the Dragons.
Yeah, and I think he adds depth to those variations as well, more options available.
He'd be that guy that, like you were just talking about before, maybe could sort of be in that six role just to, you know, be a stable person on defence and maybe just be a ball player on the left. The Sean Johnson Achilles injury, does that worry you at all?
A little bit. It is quite early in the season to be carrying those kind of niggles, you know, especially if you're not training during the week.
Did he pick that up like during a game, or is that just why it's just happened because
of... I think it's just wear and tear, man. You're getting on a bit, eh?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a bit of an old man injury.
Get Toy Harris's strapping expert in there and get him.
Well, I don't know if it's the same because it was near the back end of the year where he was really struggling with the calf, wasn't it?
That's right,
So I'm not sure if it's the same side.
Yeah, interesting.
But, yeah, you get to that age, you know, well, post-30s, it is calfs and things like that.
And Andrew Webster said earlier this week that they will rest him if they have to, right? Like, they're not going to be too proud not to rest Sean Johnson. And he said, I don't want this to be recorded for the team that we do it against to think that they're an inferior team because we're resting Sean Johnson. But, that, you know, we've got to think that that's going to factor in at some point, that Sean Johnson's going to need rest. You know, Toyo Harris might need rest at some point.
Do you think he said that because it's coming this week?
No, I don't think so.
Really?
But it might be coming in the next few weeks.
Or it could be last-minute changes, man. I wouldn't.
You think so? Well, who goes seven if that's the change?
Yeah, you'd need Chanel back, wouldn't you?
You would. You need someone. Yeah. You need one of them back for sure. Lastly, I guess I mentioned it, the player fatigue. And we've actually just mentioned it there with Sean and Tohu. In the bench rotation, are some of our boys sort of seeing too much game time? I guess with all these injuries, is that just as part and parcel of it because we just got guys out? I guess the big criticism from Sunday was not playing Zion, was having him in the extended reserves and not pulling him on because he would have been someone you could put through the middle to give the Tohus or the Adams or the whatever's a break. I mean, do we miss a trick there potentially on Sunday?
I think so, and I think they've made the adjustments there, so Zion will play this weekend, which I'm so excited for, man.
Mm. Oh, I think we all are. I wanted to see him on Sunday. And
I wanted to see him last year because he was close to coming last year. He was kind of in and out, and then he picked up that suspension in the trial game with the high shot.
That's right.
So we haven't seen him yet.
But people said to me on Sunday when I sort of brought the point up, they said, on Friday, I keep saying Sunday, I mean Friday, that he, you know, is he first grade ready? Like, that's why we didn't see him. Maybe Webby knows that he's not quite ready for first grade. But then he's gone and put him in the starting side this week. So for me, it's like, He clearly was ready, so why didn't we use him on Friday? But they're all ifs, buts, and maybes, Jello, and at the end of the day, it's just one game. And for the people that are getting very – and I was just doing it with Staffy on his show. You know, there was Dragons fans telling me they're going to make the top eight. And I'm like, look, it's one game on both sides here.
Yeah.
So let's just pump the brakes and bear in mind that the Warriors have a lot of people coming back. And Dylan Walker this week will be a massive inclusion, but we've got a lot of people coming back over the next few weeks, and it might be tough. The next few weeks might be quite tough, given that we it's only Dylan coming back. I think Bunty's not back for another 4 or 5 weeks. Marata's the same. Jazz is a while off too, and then obviously Luke's basically the season. So still a long way to go, but I think there are positives that, you know, we can take and a big game tomorrow at home, Anzac Day clash, which we will get into a little bit later on in the show as well. Very, very shortly, we're going to be joined by, in fact, he's on the line now, Tony Yeddle out of the Warriors, who is the, basically what I've been told is Jello is like the coach of the coach, basically. Looks after the pathways and the development, coaches and managers, oversees that program. He's been with the Warriors for a very long time, and a lot of people are still fond of him from his playing days. I know Staffy was raving about it from 12 to 2, but he joins us on the line now to talk about all the pathways and development programs going on at the Warriors at the moment. It's Tony Yeddle. Welcome in, Tony.
Thanks, man. Afternoon. How are you?
Very, very well. Now, first, right off the bat, positive news. The Harold Matthews team into the grand final on Sunday, mate. It's just an awesome and to have those teams back in their respective competitions is fantastic. To have one of them going through to a grand final on Sunday is even better, mate. You must be absolutely stoked.
Yeah, really happy for the team, the players, their families. It's actually, you know, we've never had an Harold Matthews team in the competition, so to make the grand final in our inaugural year is great. But, you know, to be fair, to have, you know, a, a decent pathway now of 17s, 19s, 21s, reserve grade, right up to NRL. Certainly gives our players something to aspire to, and you know, having this experience of playing finals footy, I'm sure is going to benefit these players in the long term.
Mm. We heard a lot over the last couple of years since COVID, Cam George talking a lot about bringing the junior programs back in, the development pathways, etc. And we know how well they work at more successful clubs like Penrith, etc. How big of a task was it? Give us a sense of, because it wouldn't have just come out of nothing, how big it was to actually get these programs going again, finding the players, finding the talent, putting them together, getting the coaches, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it was a big job, and I think, you know, we didn't know that we were going to be in these competitions probably till about May or June of last year, to have it sort of definite news anyway. So we'd always had a group of players contracted and some staff around those players, and there was a hope that, you know, we'd get the tick to get going. But once we did, we know we've got the talent in the country. We went around the country and found plenty of players that we thought could play at the level and could progress on to hopefully higher honours at the club. And they've done really well. So, you know, for example, you know, last week's team that we named in the in our preliminary final of the 18 boys, 11 were from outside Auckland, which says a lot about, first of all, the talent around the country, but also our ability to pull players from not just Auckland, but from around New Zealand.
Hey, Spines Jello here, mate. When you say, you know, going around the country looking for players, what is it that you're looking for, and what kind of age are you looking at?
Well, you know, like, there's a lot of NRL clubs who are very proactive around the country. You know, some clubs, the Bulldogs, for example, have got they've got an association with Canterbury Rugby League. Manly are heavily involved in and around Auckland. The Roosters are obviously around plenty of the tournaments and run camps here. So what we've tried to do was set up some academies around the country ourselves. So currently we have an association with one in Waikato, Wellington, Christchurch, and last week we established one in Dunedin. And what we're looking for are basically a good footy players, good kids, and just the chance to give them an opportunity so that they don't have to leave New Zealand, leave their local schools, leave their families. We can give them, you know, the opportunity to play elite junior football without them having to move, you know, lock, stock and barrel to the east coast of Australia. So, you know, we're looking for athletes, basically, good footy players. You know, I think kids that just want to work hard because, you know, the NRL is a hard place, it's a tough place, and if we can get these kids into our system from an early age, then we're a better chance of progressing them. So currently in the NRL, we can contract boys the age, the year that they're turning 15, which is what we do, because, as I said, it's a competitive market out there, and we want to be a part of that market.
So what does it look like from the club's perspective? Because I know a lot of people look at the Warriors system and stuff like that, and you always see, you know, a young Kiwi kid will debut for an NRL club overseas, and, you know, people always say, oh, the Warriors had him, he was in the Warriors system, and, you know, he's the one that got away or something like that. What does it look like from the club's perspective when you've got so much talent and you're trying to keep hold of everybody? What does it look like when you leave, when one of these young players, you know, how old are they when they're looking at leaving? Like, what's it look like from the club's view?
Oh, like I said, to be fair, we're just an opportunity for kids to stay in New Zealand if they want to stay in New Zealand. We want them to stay at their own school. So, like, currently now we fly kids up from Christchurch to play every weekend in the Harold Matthews just so that, you know, during the week they can go to their schools in Christchurch and be with their families. We're prepared to do that with any kid that's playing for us across the country. Are we going to miss kids? Oh, definitely. We're not. It's an open marketplace. We're not going to be able to grab every single kid that we want. And to be fair, some kids want to get to Australia and some families want to move there. But ultimately, we just want to be able to fill our NRL side with homegrown talent. The last time the boys made a grand final in 2011, over 70% of our boys were homegrown. That's when we had the under-20s as our development sort of side. Now that we've got three teams, I'd like to think in, you know, 5 to 7 years, we'll be producing the same sort of numbers.
It feels like, Tony, to your point there, we maybe, since 2011, have been missing out on this in some respect. And like I mentioned at the top, you know, Penrith, everyone looks at them now and what they were able to sort of build over a five-year period. And now you look at their junior teams all winning their respective comps and, you know, the homegrown talent that they've got. What are, I guess, the Warriors doing differently this time? What is it about these programs that you've now put in place to make sure that, you know, it's not going to be, I guess, what Warriors fans have seen for the last 27 or so years, that it's really going to be a system that has longevity, that players are going to stick with it, and that we're going to see in 5 to 10 years' time a Warriors team full of local-grown talent?
Yeah, well, I think in previous years, even when we had the under-20s, that was our first time that we could put players in a Warriors jumper. To have the ability to put kids in that jumper from, you know, the age of 15 and 16 means we'd like to think that we can get some genuine loyalty and some belief in the jersey, to be fair, and certainly making a grand final in our first year helps. So, you know, previously, you know, since we lost the under-20s in 2018, I think it was, all these kids, you know, if you can sign for an NRL club when you're 14, turning 15, and they can offer you, you know, high-quality rugby league, you know, went either in Queensland through the Cyril Connell, Mal Meninga Cup, or in Sydney with the Harold Matthews and the SG Ball, couple that with a really strong school rugby league system, it was a big pull for kids and their families to chase that dream, especially if you were a rugby league tragic like myself. Now that we've got these pathway teams, there is the ability for the kids to stay here, and we think we can provide just as a competitive program than anyone else. Back to Jello's point, we're not going to get everyone. But we want to get the ones or be able to have the fair crack at the ones we do want. And I think we're doing that at the moment.
In terms of the, I guess, development of a player or of a team of young players, and I'm sure this is where you're heavily involved in this, Tony, but how much of it is starting at the top with what, you know, Andrew Webster and Andrew McFadden and the people at the top want Warriors players to be in 5 to 10 years' time versus actually just letting these kids sort of play and develop naturally on their own? Like, is there some sort of Warriors system that goes from top to bottom, you know, whilst these players are developing?
Oh, there definitely is. And in terms of the standards, the values that the NRL players and the squad stand by, we have exactly the same. And as you mentioned, Webby and the boys, the NRL team, have done a great job in bringing the club to the forefront of all rugby league people in New Zealand and, to be fair, across Australia. I think, you know, when you're trying to get kids to come to the club, they've got to have a belief that something really special is happening, and I believe there is. I think, you know, there's real potential for some long-term success for the club, and ultimately players and parents want to be part of a winning footy team. And I think what they're seeing, you know, in terms of what the NRL boys are doing, where the club is going and the profile of it is certainly helping us in terms of recruiting the kids that we want to stay.
If you look at some of these new kids that are coming through, so Dimitrik, Jacob Laban, Ali Leotawa, is this the new kind of like the new wave of the new system? Like if we were to use Zion as an example, right? Zion's making his debut this week, very exciting. What has been Zion's like journey to get here?
Mm. Yeah, well, those boys, all those boys were part of our development squad. When COVID hit, the club sent probably eight of our best junior players who had been contracted at the club and sent them over to play in the Queensland League at Redcliffe, where the NRL team were based for a year and a bit during that COVID period. And I think you saw the benefits of them being around the NRL side. They were actually part of the last SG Ball squad, whose competition was sort of disbanded in, I think it was 2019, when the COVID wave came along. And so they were probably good evidence and proof of the system. Their journey was obviously a little bit different to what we're planning for our current crop of kids, but in terms of like putting them in Warriors jersey, getting them around the Warriors NRL team and the club, they're probably living proof that we can develop as many first graders as anyone else. In fact, I do believe someone might be able to correct me if I'm wrong, but when we have the under 20 system, we produce more first graders than any club, even the Broncos. I think they were one behind us. So. Wow. We know the talents here. We just a bit of time and the right systems, and I'm pretty sure we can get back to where we were in terms of producing local talent.
Just one more question about the talent scouting. So when you go out and you're looking at players, are you looking purely at what they do athletically, or is there kind of a little bit more to it? You know, you talk about standards and values. Do you dive a little bit deeper into that with the kids, or do you kind of just pick the best athletes and hope that they're good people as well?
Oh, I think, you know, we never sign a kid after one game and go, right, he's coming here. Mm. I think, you know, the best thing is to get him and the parents in. They come and train at the club for, you know, a month or so.
We get to know
about them.
That'd be a good
Almost.
One.
Eh? I mean, Jallo thought he had finished his athletic career.
The parents do a, you know, they're generally really committed to their kids. They sit out in the car park for hours, you know, on training nights. But to be fair, you know, we're not going to sign a kid and without him knowing what we're about, and also what we have a little bit more knowledge about what he's about. So I think the game's not for everyone. The club isn't for everyone. So we have to make sure that we're a good fit. And, you know, sometimes, as I said, young kids and their families are keen to move to Australia. But, like I said, we just want to be able to give them an opportunity that if they feel like New Zealand's home and they want to stay at school with their friends, they want to stay with their families, then we're a genuine option to progress them into higher honours.
Mm. A couple of quick ones for me to finish, Tony. Just firstly, do you feel like there's been a bigger shift or more importance put on like development and pathways across the NRL? I'm not saying that clubs haven't always done this, but it just seems like in recent times, you know, the Bulldogs are sort of following suit now, the Warriors are following suit off the back of Penrith. It seems to be that there is now a more genuine focus that you build a club from the ground up. Is that how it feels from your perspective?
Well, all I know is that at every tournament we have around the country, nearly every NRL club is there looking for boys. So, and we understand the market. As I said, we've got one advantage in that we're able to keep the kids at home and at their schools. But we also understand that it's very competitive. I think clubs. You're right. I think clubs are now getting an understanding of, although that's a heavy investment. In the long term, it's probably the best thing in terms for the club and how generate their next crop of talent. I know the Bulldogs are always known as the family club. They used to develop kids from around the area, but even them now, they're sitting in an area which is surrounded by Parramatta, the Tigers, Penrith, Parramatta. So they, you know, it's a really condensed area of NRL clubs who are chasing all the same kids. So I can sort of understand why they're trying to come here and grab a couple as well.
Yeah, and I guess that's the advantage for us, isn't it, that we've got that sort of, not a monopoly, but obviously we don't have anyone particularly close trying to compete, although, like you mentioned, we've got them all over here watching the tournament. Just to finish, Tony, if you could, I guess, zoom out and crystal ball 10 years into the future, what's your ultimate goal of where you want the sort of pathways and the development to lead? If you could say 10 years in the future, this is where the Warriors sit, where would it be for you?
Oh, I think, you know, we've obviously got to refine the way we're working for the first year. You know, the young fellas have done a good job in terms of making the grand final in the 17s. Certainly, you know, in 10 years' time, I'd like to think our NRL side is basically almost full of homegrown talent, whether that's from Auckland, Wellington, Waikato, Christchurch, I don't really care, as long as they're Kiwis. The club will always invest in players where, you know, from overseas, if we feel we need some positions to cover. But my ultimate goal is that, you know, we're successful across the five teams, that we're generating talent, and that we're putting pressure on the NRL coaches to play our young kids. That'd be that's my goal in 10 years.
I got one more question, and this is a bit of an age old one. It goes back and forth. If we were to have a second NRL team in New Zealand, do you think it would just dilute the product that we have with the Warriors, or do you think it would strengthen the game overall?
Good question. I think initially, you know, you'd probably see a little bit of dilution. But yeah, it's a really tough one, Jello. I can understand, you know, there's a couple of consortiums in the country that feel New Zealand need another side. I'd like to think that, you know, that might be a few years away yet. But certainly, you know, going through the country and seeing the talent and the actual upsurge in interest in rugby league, and which what were usually rugby union dominated areas, has been really refreshing. I think if the NRL boys can hold that profile and that success over the next few years, then I'm certainly, you know, there'll be room for another side. I'll worry about our boys in blue at the moment.
Awesome. Hey, Tony, really appreciate you jumping on. We've taken up plenty of your time, mate. It's been awesome to just hear and get your insight into that development and pathways program, which I know so many Warriors fans are very keen on hearing about now that we've got these teams playing again and in grand finals too, which is awesome. So enjoy Sunday. Well, enjoy tomorrow and enjoy Sunday as well, because that's going to be an awesome occasion too. Thanks heaps for jumping on.
Appreciate it. Thanks for your time.
There you go, Tony Edor there, who leads the Pathways and Development Program at the Warriors. Some really awesome insights there, Jello. We've got to take a break because we're running out of time. I might dig in with you after the break. A couple of texts that have come in here as well. Stay with us here on Running It Straight. Welcome back into Running It Straight. We are about 20 minutes away from 3. Good long chat with Tony Edor there, and if you didn't catch it, go and find it on our podcast channels. We spent so much time with him, we're not going to have a whole bunch of time to preview round 8. So what we're going to do is we'll get stuck into the Warriors-Titans game tomorrow, and then myself and Jello will go, once the show ends at 3, we'll go into the studio and record our preview for round 8. So if you want to listen to that, go find it on the podcast channels following the show. But let's chat about Warriors-Titans tomorrow at 4 p.m. It's the opening game of round 8, and of course it is Anzac Day and Anzac Round. And I actually can't remember the last time the Warriors opened an NRL round, Jello, like the first game of the round. So, did they usually do that with the Thursday game with Melbourne? Was it always
because Anzac Day falls on any old day. Usually it's kind of floats around the weekend. Yeah. I think there might have been a couple of times where they play Melbourne on the opening.
Okay, I just couldn't remember the last time we did it. But anyway, they are doing it tomorrow at Go Media Stadium, Mount Smart. First time we get an Anzac game in how long? And unfortunately, the stat says we are 0-9 over the last 9 Anzac games. They've all been against the Melbourne Storm. I would have actually liked Jello to play Melbourne, you know, at home with this current team, you know, knowing that we can sort of beat them. It would have been a great hoodoo to get over. Yeah. And it's the Titans, which in a way is going to be good for the ego if we can put a performance in, but it just doesn't quite feel the same. But tomorrow night at 4 p.m. Warriors v Titans. I'll just run through the team lists and then we'll analyse those first. So Nickel Clockstar starting fullback, Watene Zelezniak and Marcelo on the two wings, then Rocco Berry, Roger Tuivasa-Sheck the centres, Tamati Martin, Sean Johnson the halves, Adam Fennell, Blake, Mitch Barnett, the starting props, Wade Egan, the number 9, then Jackson Ford, Jacob Laban gets his starting debut in the 12, Juzi Tuu Harris, the 13, then you've got Dylan Walker, Tom Ale, Zion Mai'u'u, and Paulie Roach on the interchange. What do you make of the 17, Joe? Dylan Walker back in, which is good news. No Kirk Capewell, though, and Zion Mai'u'u getting that debut, too.
No major surprises there, just the Capewell one. I think he was a late exclusion. But it's an exciting team, man. Jacob Laban, we've seen a little bit of him so far. It's going to be good to see some more of him. Zion as well. I can't wait for him to get on, man.
Yeah.
Okay, we've signed Fisher Harris for next year. You got Zion, Dimitrik, Jacob Laban. What these guys are going to look like in 3 years, 4 years.
Yep.
That's going to be a pack of doom.
Well,
that's Bash Brothers. They're building the Bash Brothers.
I was saying last night on that podcast that, you know, that these are the ones you should be excited about. Like, I'm excited about James Fisher-Harris, but these are the ones you should be excited about because in 4 to 5 years' time, to your point, they're going to be the ones that are your starting pack and they're going to be guns. Mm. So
these guys are young. They're like 19.
Yeah.
So these guys have gone crazy. From SG Ball straight to training with first grade, playing New South Wales Cup. You know, they've gone, jumped straight over jersey flag and all that stuff.
There's actually a text that's coming here as well that's agreeing with a comment that was made. Also, from Sean says, I can see Sean being a late scratching tomorrow. Do we think Tane Tuopiki can cover the halves? I think we need to leave Walker playing the middle ball role. They've missed so much this year. But, yeah, suggestions that maybe this week could be the week that they rest. Jello, do you know something we don't know?
Oh, if he's not training. If he hasn't trained for 2 weeks in a row.
That's true, actually. Yeah, yeah. He hasn't been training with the team. So maybe, okay, we'll keep our eyes.
The only thing that made me question it was a comment of, you know, if we were to pull him out, it's not that we're saying we think less of any other team.
Yeah, true.
But if you were to pull him out, it would be against that time. Maybe, I don't know.
Your words, not Webster's. Hey,
every game's a hard game.
Yeah, no, you do agree. And that's probably what he's trying to say. Let's have a look at the Titans team. AJ Brimson, the number one. Jaden Campbell still out with that knee injury. Alofiana Kamparera and Jojo Fifita, the two wings. Brian Kelly, Harley Smith-Shields in the centres. Tana Boyd back in the six with Kieran Foran in the seven. Moika Fotueka and Jermaine Jolliffe, the two props. Chris Randall, the number nine. David Fifita, Bo Furmore, the two back rows. And Cleese Haas, the lock. Sam Verrills, Aaron Clark, Isaac Liu and Josiah Pahulu on the interchange. What do you make of the Titans 17, the big story for them, obviously, in 2024 is no win so far. No Tino Fasomalawi, no Jaden Campbell at the back. But what do you make of that 17 from Dez?
AJ Brimson at fullback.
Mm-hmm. I think that's dangerous.
I think a lot of people wanted him to be the fullback. They've been trialling him at centre and stuff like that. That'll be interesting to see. Tanner Boyd, he was dropped 2 weeks ago, and they've actually been playing quite good without him. So
yeah, but he did play well last week against Manly, Tana Boyd.
Yeah. True. So I think he's kind of like a Jackson Hastings with Newcastle. You know, they sent him back to Cup to because it wasn't working, give him a bit of a boot up the backside, and now he's back and, you know, seems to be playing all right. So, you know, it's a dangerous team, man. You look at that back five, you know, Pereira, Kelly, they score from anywhere.
I think the back lines are actually quite similar, more similar than people think. Like AJ Brimson is a similar player to Chance, but is probably a little bit more, he's a bit faster, so he's a little bit more explosive speed. You know, the wingers in terms of Cam Pereira, like, he can create tries, you know, he can create points off those opportunities. Jojo Fifita is pretty exciting. Brian Kelly, like, underrated defensively as well. I think he's a real strong defensive centre. So whereabouts from what you've seen from the Titans over the last couple of weeks, and they've gotten close to those to that first win, what about them scares you? Like, we're on the park, do you think they're going to try and take the Warriors on? We might be a little bit fragile.
Well, I think each week they've been getting better and better and better, and it reminds me of the Bulldogs. So the Bulldogs, they started terribly, and then they've kind of just stuck to their guns in some respects and just played tough and rolled up the sleeves. And you look at someone like Cleese Haas, at 13. He's getting big minutes, and there's just more experience. And every week he looks better and better and better. You know, Jolliffe as well, he's playing big minutes too. And they, you know, David Fifita, he was starting on the bench for most games. Now he's back in the starting team. So, you know, even he's starting to get a bit of wind in his sails now. I just think, you know, like the Bulldogs have just kind of stuck tough and not changed too much. They're starting to get results.
Yeah.
You hope that this isn't the week that they kind of make it click.
We'll just save it for one more week.
Yeah.
I feel like, Jello, the Titans play their best football with that broken play type stuff, and particularly with AJ Brimson. Like, he breaks a game open when, like, defences are lapping or there's a ball to ground or, you know, a dodgy kick or whatever. Sort of like Tyrell Sloan was for the Dragons, you know, and Zach Lomax. So, I think the Warriors, you know, it's going to be about grinding the Titans down. Like, it's completion rate, it's meter eating, and it's getting to an area of the park where we can put pressure on them. Defensively, you know, they're one of the worst teams in the comp. I think they have 32 points a game average over the first seven rounds. So the points are there to be scored.
Yeah. Well, I think every game they've lost, they've conceded 30 points or more.
There you go. So it'll be a matter
of... And they've lost every game.
So. Yeah, so there you go. So it's a matter of obviously putting those points on the board for the Warriors and making sure that they don't give the Titans a sniff, because I think, you know, a lot of emotion tomorrow, Jello, with it being Anzac Day back home in New Zealand, a special day for everyone here, but also for the Warriors, given they always have that Anzac Day commemoration. So just got to be careful that, you know, the Titans don't take advantage of that and come out flying and all of a sudden, you know.
And there's something that didn't happen last week. So the Dragons, you know, they did play a loose game, a lot of ball on the ground, a lot of broken play. I think if the Warriors want to stop that and really control things, you've got to stay up. You've got to be prepared for those offloads, which means, you know, not retreating early.
Mm.
Third man, you got to be, you know, second man, you got to be wrapped up on that ball.
Yeah.
Just all the little things that they have been doing well most weeks, but, you know, really let slip last week. So maybe that's been a focus of the week for training and stuff like that.
What's your prediction, Jello?
I'm thinking Warriors 1-12.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think the Titans will roll over. And the last 2 weeks, we've seen that they can defend their line.
There's been
patches where they just hang real tough, like in that Raiders game.
I think it was 7 sets against Raiders. I think it was.
Yeah. It would have been the week before the Eagles game. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where they just they were happy just to kick it dead if they needed to, and then just you know, drop the ball out and just keep D'ing up.
Mm.
And I think they built a lot of confidence from that, and you could see it in that Seagulls game.
All right, we've got to take a break. When we come back, we have a quick chat about Jet Cleary, and we'll preview the rest of the round post-show as well. Stick with us here on Running It Straight.